Welcome back to FTI Consulting's Step Up series, a podcast that explores the buzz of starting up as an entrepreneur, scaling up global companies, and stepping up to the societal challenges that business leadership can help fix. Today, we meet Sam Fromson, founder of insurance startup YouLife, interviewed by our very own Rob Mindell, Managing Director in London.
Welcome back to another episode of FTI Consulting's Step Up series. We are joined today by Sam Fromson, co-founder of YouLife, a business we're going to hear a lot more about in the next 20 or so minutes. And we can talk through disruption, we're going to talk through impact, we're going to talk through having a social purpose too. But first, why don't you start by telling us a bit about YouLife and what you do?
Well, thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to be on here with you. Sure, YouLife. YouLife is building the future of insurance. You know, no one wakes up in the morning thinking, God, I want to buy life insurance. But what our mission is to do is to turn insurance into a force for good, to turn it into a product that delivers value to people on a daily basis and take an industry that's been focused on death and on claims and turn it into something that's focused on life and inspire people to live their best lives every single day. We're really lucky that alongside our mission, it's an incredible commercial opportunity as well, because if you can genuinely help people to live a longer, happier, healthier life, it's great for them as an individual. It's great for their environment, for their family, for the company that they exist within. But also, of course, it's great for their insurer because they're a lower risk. So we're really privileged to be in a position with this incredible win-win. If we can achieve that goal of helping people to live longer, healthier lives, great for them, and it's also great for us as a business.
Amazing. And we're going to discuss a bit more about that five-year journey, but it from the outset, it just seems such a positive message of the way that you are changing that focus for the consumer in particular around the approach to life insurance, and what people might think of as one of the oldest industries, you know, played out on the kind of the corridors of the city. It is amazing how you're creating a innovative and dynamic approach there. But look, let's start at the beginning. So 5 years ago, what made you think about this market and, you know, the opportunity for disruption and innovation?
Yeah, great. Thank you. It actually happened completely serendipitously. I must say, I never set out to build an insurance company. I never set out to work in insurance. I started off my career, maybe as we'll get to, I trained as a rabbi, and then went to go work in finance, worked in a hedge fund and then a family office, and then moved across to work in another tech company. And I was helping build and launch a product in the UK. Really exciting. And it was whilst I was on that journey building this other company, and I sat down at a charity dinner next to someone. We just got chatting, and his name was Sammy Rubin. And he just struck me as this really intriguing individual. He'd previously been the CEO of Vitality Life, of a you know, large life insurer, and was now thinking about his next move and thinking about what to build. And, you know, we just sat down, chatted, had a great rapport, and actually met up the next day for a cup of coffee. And he was telling me about his experiences in the insurance industry. I was sharing with him my journey through tech and through building a fintech. And it felt like one of those moments where you meet someone and you have so much in common, yet at the same time, so many different complementary skills, different perspectives. And we set off on a journey to build YouLife together. It very quickly became apparent to us that we needed someone who could really formulate the technology and the product that's at the heart of the mission we were trying to achieve. We found Josh Harp, our CTO, who I think had lived with you as a roommate, and we've been building the business together ever since.
Well, you're telling the tales of entrepreneurial London here, Sam, but actually you mentioned right at the beginning of the interview your background, right, which is you were trained as a rabbi, you still hold a post as a rabbi, keeping that second role aside from being a founder, as well as being a spiritual leader for community. That is fairly unique. I don't know if you've come across anyone else who has that same dual role or something similar, perhaps with another faith.
There's actually one individual I do know who is now the founder of a new company, who is a priest, wow, who still practices very occasionally. He doesn't hold a community position, but does occasionally preach and does officiate at weddings.
Amazing.
So we had a wonderful time at a fintech conference. It's like a rabbi and a priest at a fintech conference in the Alps.
If any listeners know of an imam who wants to create the next unicorn, please do message in.
We could have a little three faiths forum around the future of the tech industry. No, but generally, it's not something I commonly see. And I do get a lot of questions around it. And people think it's like dissonant, or people think it's a conflict in some way being involved in a community and a spiritual perspective, and also running a business.
So one thing I'm really curious about is, how does being a rabbi help you as a founder for a tech company? And how does being a founder for a tech company help you as a community rabbi?
Yeah, look, if you think about what it is to run a high-performing business, and this is something that I'm sure in your consulting life, you know, you speak to people a lot about. For me, it really comes down to people, because you can have an outstanding idea and you can be attacking an incredible market. You can have great funding behind you, but if you can't bring people together, if you can't inspire people to go on that mission, you can't make people work together in an effective way, you know, it's not going to go anywhere. And so I really find that as a founder, I spend a lot of my time working with people, you know, working through their challenges, helping them to step up to different opportunities, and also ensuring that we have a healthy organization, people functioning well together as a business. And as the COO, that's a lot of my responsibility is really manifesting that and working to continue to improve it. And that's something that's very similar to rabbinics, where rabbinics is very much a people-centric role. You know, it's not a cold, clinical, sterile job where you're, you know, standing at a pulpit announcing unto the congregation, hear ye, hear ye. That's not the kind of rabbi I am, nor could I ever be. It's about working with people. It's about being there for them in the ups and downs of life, being there to officiate at weddings and joyful moments, but also being able to be deeply empathetic and be able to support people at funerals, or if they've lost a loved one or going through a hardship.
So perhaps the world has moved on very recently. And actually more commonly we're speaking to early stage businesses that from day one want to set out on a mission a similar way to YouLife has done. But there's an antiquated notion that business and ethics don't always go hand in hand. Sometimes they are very difficult decisions to make that might well be the right thing to, for commercially, the right thing to improve your profitability, but might be the wrong thing from an ethical perspective. Has that ever come up? Is your decision making, your compass, swayed by the fact that actually you have this, as we say, the second role as a rabbi?
Yeah, so it's a really great question. And of course, we come up with those challenges. How do you deal with a particular individual? How do you, you know, market your business? What type of deals do you go after? How do you construct the proposition? And all of those are ethical, moral questions tied up into it. And genuinely, as a business, we definitely don't get it right the whole time. And, you know, I'll be the first one to point out that we've made mistakes and we'll continue to make mistakes and we'll do our best not to, but it's inevitable that that's the case. But we really do try and do the right thing and to treat people in the way that we'd wish to be treated. And you can make hard decisions, but to deliver it in a way that's compassionate and empathetic. And we do need to let people go sometimes. And I've fired, you know, a number of individuals as part of this journey or had to let them go for different reasons. But the trick is to do it with humanity and to recognize that it's not just a number, it's not just an administrative task. This is someone's life that you're dealing with, or in the product sense, this is someone's life that you're insuring, and to be really confident that whatever decision we come to, we can stand behind it. We're proud to be challenged about it and to be able to defend decisions that we made in the eyes of others.
Sam, it's so wonderful to hear a founder being open and honest about the challenges, even at what is very much the startup to scale up phases. Everyone assumes that the early years, it's all, you know, everything's going in your direction, the wind is in your sails, and it's all full steam to your North Star. But actually, it's to know that there are bumps in the road may well be comforting to other founders listening.
I mean, I'm very happy to share more details on those. There's plenty of mistakes we've made. We've hired the wrong people for different roles. We spent far too much money on things that ended up not working. We didn't get deep enough insight into the needs of specific customers at times when we were releasing products. And that's happened time and time again. And I'm sure will continue to happen. And any founder going through those trials and tribulations just know that it's completely normal not to be on the top of your game, making kick-ass decisions and, you know, breaking down doors every single day. That doesn't happen apart from the movies.
But it seems to be that, you know, through all those, as you say, mistakes, I'm actually sure that there was a whole range of scenarios of which you probably end up towards the better options. You seem to have reached a point where there's real momentum in the business.
We're really fortunate. We've got a product that's really meeting the needs of where companies are at today. We sell life insurance into companies as a benefit, and we sell it to companies that both have had the product before or who've never been insured before. And what we say is that you're spending money on life insurance already, or you're thinking about benefits. Put in place something that really matters. Put in place something that your people will value every single day. And especially over the last 18 months, the last 2 years, the importance of employee well-being, the realization that companies need to do more to look after their staff is very much front of mind. And I feel very blessed that we're in the place where our product is really meeting that need. It's resonating with those HR directors. And, you know, our message of building in everyday healthy habits, of helping people to take positive steps every single day to improve their health and well-being, is really landing. And it's something that companies need right now.
And I just wonder, has the relationship between employers and employees changed so dramatically in recent years that has enabled New Life to come about? And actually, you know, the question is, you know, if you created New Life 10 years ago, would it have gone anywhere at all? And then the second part of the question is, actually, is New Life becoming the catalyst for this change? Are you finding that with your customers, actually, suddenly you have people who are far more engaged in their employers because they are part of a well-rounded relationship, which is about financial, personal, mental well-being?
I'd love to say that we're the catalyst of the change in all situations, but I'll tell you something that one of our first investors said to us. This was Saul at Local Globe. He said, "I love backing businesses that are riding a wave. Making a wave is bloody hard work. To make a wave, you need a huge amount of energy. But to ride a wave, that's something that's what I'm looking to back businesses that are riding a wave." And I really feel that this was a wave starting maybe 5-10 years ago of companies taking holistic responsibility for their employees' well-being, of realizing that it's about not just, a paycheck and a bottom line, but it's also about caring holistically for their employees' development and for their physical well-being, their mental well-being, their financial well-being, and really taking into account all those considerations. That's a wave that's been growing. It's a wave that's really been growing over the last few years, and the last 2 years have just accelerated it so strongly.
And specifically, those last years, that's the pandemic impact, right? So can we unpick that a bit more, and maybe you might have some examples?
Yeah, very much so. Look, so we're working now with a national retailer. We're working with the co-op, and the co-op has got a huge, incredible workforce, 60,000 colleagues across the UK. And they were really thinking, what can we do to invest in our colleagues? What can we do to put together a wellbeing programme that's digitally enabled, that brings together all the other different services we're buying, that rewards people for working on their health, rewards people for looking after themselves, whilst also providing a really important benefit? And we're really honoured that they've chosen to work with us to put in place New Life for every colleague across the co-op estate. And we're going to be working with them to create that wellbeing strategy and ensure that every single member of the co-op family has access to great wellbeing tools, has access to an EAP, has access to all the other benefits that they're buying. But it comes through a single app that sits in their pocket, that also looks after their insurance, that also rewards them for walking, for mindfulness, for meditation. And they're an example of a company really at the forefront of thinking holistically about how to care for their team.
It's amazing to hear. And as mentioned, Sam, there's real momentum in the business. Where do you go from here, right? You are delivering already. You have a whole host of household names who are using the product, using the platform. What's next?
So much left to do. Look, we really still feel, and it's an honour to feel like we really still feel like we're at the beginning of our journey. You know, we've made some great progress in the UK. There's still a long way to go to take meaningful market share. We're looking to really grow our business in the UK. We're also looking to really deepen our insurance infrastructure and the insurance products that we offer to clients. At the moment, we offer life, income protection, critical illness on a company level. We're really excited to also be able to offer individual products to employees so that they have all the benefits that come with the ULife app, but they can also buy maybe extra dental cover, cash plan, or travel directly through our app.
Got it. I mean, look, it seems like a huge amount of product innovation that is possible to happen. I guess that might also include international expansion too.
That's exactly right. We're really thinking about that carefully at the moment. It's an amazing opportunity. We're building a global insurance brand. You know, we're starting in the UK, but our mission is to build a global insurance business that impacts the lives of millions of people across the world. And we've done, you know, thankfully, we've been successful in getting up and running in the UK. But the next step is to think about where can we take the ULife proposition? Which other countries have a similar benefits market? Where do employers purchase benefits for their employees in a similar way? And how can we take the ULife proposition international?
It's amazing to hear. And actually, I started this conversation scratching my head thinking, this is going to be a fun one, hearing about your unique role, as we mentioned, this spiritual and communal leadership in the role as a rabbi, but also that people leadership as a co-founder of an exciting, dynamic and disruptive force in the insurance industry. But actually, I don't necessarily think that they match each other. It sounds like your role as a rabbi matches your customers, right? Your buyers, the HR directors, the people managers, and those leaders of organizations who see their workforce as a group of people who have different needs, largely changed by the pandemic, right? And I just wondered to what extent that how you define your communal leadership role and how you look at your role, not your personal role, but ULife's role in changing or being part of that wave of change among your customers.
We really do believe that the businesses are searching for solutions for their team. You know, businesses realize now the importance of caring for employee well-being, and they're looking for answers. They're really looking out in the market to say, how can I help? And it's our privilege to be able to help wherever we can, because our proposition does bring together that holistic financial, physical, and mental well-being for employees. And we do it within an existing budget line. People are already paying for life insurance. So it's generally, you know, they're okay with the idea of expanding that spend a bit, but in order to get so much more value. And our business does take that role. We then are implementing wellbeing, helping them with their wellbeing strategies and trying to tie in to the other initiatives across the business and connect disparate benefits, bring them together in a holistic package so that employees can get the maximum value for the things that the business is spending money on. And we see that as really as our job, to help those companies get the maximum that they can from what we have to offer.
It sounds like you are well on the way to achieving that mission, with people and social purpose at its core. Sam, thank you very much. Or as some might say, kol hakavod. Thank you for joining us on the Step Up podcast. It's been a real pleasure. Best of luck for those exciting and innovative steps ahead.
So much. A really pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to FTI Consulting Step Up series. For more information, head to fticommunications.com and subscribe on Audioboom so you never miss an episode.